This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
There are still outlets putting out NFL power rankings, and I guess so. You know, look, content, got to have content right now. Content is king. And certainly the fortunes of some teams have changed to where it's relevant. You know, probably the biggest ones are teams that have made moves and decisions involving the quarterback position. The NFL.com power rankings I'm looking at, not very friendly to the New England Patriots, highly friendly to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But Seth, I don't know if you've looked at these NFL.com power rankings. If you have not, would you care to take a stab at where the Texans sit in these rankings right now?
I know where they sit in the rankings, which is where they almost always sit in the NFL.com power rankings, which is somewhere, and I haven't looked at this list, Sean. I know that they're somewhere between 14 and 17.
They are at 15, Seth. They're at
15. Okay. Almost smack dab in the middle, right? This is what the NFL.com, and I think accurately so, they've pointed out that the Texans, in a lot of respects, are a mediocre offense, a mediocre to bad defense this past season, but with some really good special teams, and that all balances out to about a middle-of-the-road team.
They were actually ninth at the end of the season, and which makes sense because they won a playoff game. They were one of the last eight teams standing. Given how it went for them in the playoffs in that divisional round, I would say they were eighth out of those eight teams that were still left standing, considering they gave up a 51-7 run after taking a 24-0 lead in Kansas City. So they dropped six spots in this NFL.com power ranking. The Patriots and the Broncos were the only two teams that had bigger drops. The Broncos one is a little bit weird. They dropped from 18th to 25th. I'm trying to think, did the Broncos do anything cataclysmic that would, anyways, but the Patriots dropping eight spots all the way to 16 is not a big shock considering that they lost their quarterback.
I think with the Broncos, it was just a matter of, okay, last year they were making a good effort with a rookie quarterback. And now they're saying, okay, going into a second year, and you don't know exactly what's going on. There's more uncertainty, I suppose.
Yeah, here's the paragraph about the Texans. Here's what it says. It's a trade that could go down as one of the greatest heists ever. Hopkins in a fourth to the Cardinals for David Johnson, a second and a fourth. Hopkins, arguably the best receiver in the league, was sent packing for 50 cents on the dollar in a seismic trade that puts Bill O'Brien directly under the spotlight and perhaps on the hot seat like never before. Hopkins used social media to downplay the reports of a fractured relationship, and O'Brien can present the trade to his boss as a move that provides future cap relief, imports a quality player in Johnson, and delivers welcome draft capital. But come on paper, the Texans got a lot worse. You can only wonder what Deshaun Watson is thinking, especially now that he's in cryptic tweet mode. Here's the interesting thing about this, Seth, about that sentence. On paper, the Texans got a lot worse.
Yeah.
The Texans... I retweeted, someone tweeted something this weekend to me that was just laying out the Texans as if the building was on fire. Everything's terrible. And I'm not here to be an apologist or anything like that. I'm just here to bring the realism that comes with looking at the game, maybe through the prism I do, which is the gambling world. The gambling world, which is usually pretty good at forecasting this stuff, sees DeAndre Hopkins as being basically worth half a win. They went from being an 8.5 win team to an 8 win team. Doesn't mean they're a good team, but that the sentence on paper, the Texans got a lot worse. No, they lost their best player, but the way football operates, and I think our audience knows this, if it were Deshaun Watson that they traded, then that would necessitate a move in a power ranking that would be, oh my God, these guys are a lot worse. As great as DeAndre Hopkins is, there's only so much impact that a receiver can have on the overall welfare of a football team.
Except I will say, I think the Cardinals' win total went up by one full win. So whatever, yeah. So, I mean, so maybe he's worth a win. Maybe he's only worth a half a win, whatever it might be. I think like anytime there's notable movement, I don't think DJ Reader leaving would have put any movement on it at all.
No,
I think when you make a huge trade like that and you lose your best player, it's just, you're flat out. Now it's a trade that doesn't get you better. Like unless David Johnson, now this is what I wonder about with David Johnson coming back is, the argument is that, okay, yeah, but David Johnson still has some ability as a receiver, and that's why you got him. Well, okay, but I got tired of explaining that the reason Duke Johnson wasn't used all the time was because he was more of a receiver than a runner, and in some game plans, look, they had to establish the run. So if you can underutilize Duke Johnson in the passing game, I don't understand necessarily how bringing in another guy to perhaps underutilize, who's no good as an actual runner from behind center anymore, I don't understand exactly how that makes you better. Even if you disregard all draft compensation and everything, it doesn't make you a better football team.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I think the thing in that sentence there, and I guess that I took umbrage with the person who tweeted at me that I retweeted, because I think I retweeted them and said, I don't disagree that the Hopkins trade was a bad trade. I just think that your assessment of the effect of the Hopkins trade on the team was maybe overstated a little bit. The statement in here that they're going to be a lot worse on paper, I don't think they're a lot worse. And to some Texan fans, they probably wish they were a lot worse, because if they were a lot worse, it might hasten a change at the top. I still think, Seth, the total is 8 wins in Vegas. I would still take the over solely based on two things: Deshaun Watson being on the football team and Bill O'Brien's seeming ability to squeeze 9-win seasons at the very least out of whatever he's handed, other than the 2017 season when everybody got injured that year. Like Bill O'Brien finds ways to go 9-7.
I think the big question, though, is we don't have a whole lot of experience with what the offense looks like with DeAndre Hopkins not out there, because he's out there all the time. We do have experience with what the offense looks like when DeAndre Hopkins is severely banged up, because he was in the final postseason games the last 2 years versus the Colts and this last year versus the Chiefs, and the offense didn't look so hot, you know? Right. So that's what I wonder about is, it's, yes, okay, a standard wide receiver, even a really good wide receiver, doesn't necessarily affect the win total all that much, but a lot of that's based on averages. I don't know how much of this offense is basically built and based on DeAndre Hopkins attracting attention away from other receiving options. Now, some people have made the argument that, hey, maybe in a small respect, this could be good for Deshaun's development, because he won't look at DeAndre as a safety blanket as much. I'm hesitant to buy that line of reasoning in this case, just because DeAndre Hopkins was a safety blanket, not just as a target, but also as a guy that helped make other guys open. So like you're losing this, you're losing the security blanket on two levels, not just one.
Yeah. We're talking about these NFL power rankings on NFL.com. The Texans are 15th. They dropped 6 spots. Just another team, not Texans related. By the way, the Cardinals moved up 3. They're still viewed as the 23rd best team in the league by the people putting these rankings together, for what it's worth. So while this group says the Texans got a lot worse on paper, it doesn't appear as though there's been a reciprocal improvement in their opinion. Cardinals up 3 spots. They're still in the bottom, near the bottom quartile of the league in terms of teams. How about the Chargers actually moving up 1 spot, losing Phillip Rivers and replacing him with Tyrod Taylor?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, does it? And I think that, well, they got Chris Harris Jr. They bolstered their addition, or they bolstered their defense to the point where I think people feel like, okay, this will be a real strength and help out Tyrod Taylor. But I don't think, well, what are they, 24th on here? Yeah.
They're 24th. Like they moved up 1 spot. I don't know that it doesn't totally make sense. I'll say this, Seth, comparing these two guys, and you're right, picking up Chris Harris, they made some moves on defense. That's a really good defense, at least on paper. I'll say this about the two quarterbacks, and this is where I look at it and I say this might make sense, is if Phillip Rivers was sort of a poor man's version of Jameis Winston when it came to turning the football over and making plays that damaged his team, whatever you think of Tyrod Taylor as a quarterback, and I think he's good. I think he's good enough to win games on certain teams. He protects the football really, really well. He's usually, when he plays, he's typically at the very top of the league in terms of interception percent, you know, the percentage of throws that he throws and turns the ball over. He's the opposite of Phillip Rivers in terms of protecting the football. And I could see to where if the Chargers, what are they picking, sixth in the draft? So they were probably 5-11 last year. I don't have the standings in front of me. Could it be a version of a similar thing in Tampa Bay to where they go, man, if we just get somebody who doesn't throw 30 picks, then we're probably 9-7 or 10-6. I could very well see with the Chargers looking at it the same way where, man, if we just protect the football, we're probably going to be in every game that we're in, and we'd probably go 8-8, something like that.
Yeah, and they added Brian Bulaga and Trey Turner, offensive linemen. So the offensive line has just been a disaster there forever. But it seems like even when they add players to the Chargers, somehow they figure out a way to botch it or guys get injured. And just I don't trust that they're going to be – I don't trust they're going to be better. What's the over-under on average attendance for the Chargers this year?
Well, are we assuming that they're playing in the new stadium?
That's true. Yeah, never mind. Are we assuming that anybody's going to be playing in front of anybody? Yes. Yeah, so
I guess the over, zero.
I guess the over under on anybody is going to be like, okay, how many people are there on a game day television staff? They'll be playing in front of 200, 300, I suppose.
Hey, I along those lines, I haven't read this post yet. I've got it bookmarked on Twitter to read, but it's from Mike Florio. And I don't know if you saw this, but it was an intriguing enough tweet to me to where I favorited it so I could read it after the show. NFL's contingency plans for 2020 should include the possibility of taking all the teams to the middle of nowhere for 4 months of coronavirus-free football. Reaction. Yeah.
I think that it's a great idea in theory, just like communism is a great idea in theory, but it kind of falls apart when you try to actually execute it, you know?
Where do you go?
It sounds like a really good idea. It makes a lot of sense until you figure on how actual humans operate. I don't know. Okay, so you'd have to ask players to basically be quarantined in some, I would say go do it in Vegas or something, right? Like Vegas is a bunch of, or some city that's otherwise somewhat desolate right now. Or like maybe if there's a convention center, go to Branson, Missouri. I suppose probably all those people aren't there vacationing right now. And you'd have to quarantine pretty much 15 to 1800 players, plus all the coaches, plus all the support staff, plus their families. I mean, is this going to be like one of those Soviet cities that they created? It's like out in the middle of Siberia to create weapons and stuff. I don't know if it's possible.
And again, I'm admitting that I have not read the post yet. I'm just reacting to the tweet that teased it and trying to picture what this is going to look like. And I'll read it and we can go into it tomorrow if it's something that is actually Florio's doing for real and not tongue in cheek. Seth, I think about it's football. Think about how many guys are on the Texans roster from weeks 1 through 17. Probably like 75 guys when it's all said and done. What do you do? Do you also sequester the other 1,000 guys that could potentially be on an NFL roster? Like, when they go through cuts in training camp, do you just keep all these guys in a building somewhere so they don't touch society? Because what if they go back out with the rest of us infected Jamokes, and then they get called up or we had a guy go down for the season. We need you to come play defensive end for us. And some infected COVID-19 dude comes in, and now all of a sudden we're right back to where we started again.
Oh, no, dude, this feels like North Korea, and it would be a failure. Look, the communism analogy is better than I was even thinking. Like, usually what happens in communism is the theory, the philosophy is, oh, yes, the state will take care of everything. We'll have one central governing body, and they'll provide for all. We're all in it together. And then, meanwhile, midway through, like, people don't all abide by the rules, and everything falls apart. So, yeah, you're gonna have NFL players starving to death. Starvation, yep. Mass starvation, and potentially a cold war of some sort. No.
This is why we must flatten the curve. In fact, Seth and I are trying to flatten the curve on the pandemic of terrible things in sports. Seth, the goal here in society is to flatten the curve. And of course, we're talking about the COVID-19 curve. But it's given us a chance to reflect and think of other things that if we took appropriate action, we might be able to flatten the curve, both in the world of sports and societally. and some of the things that that we came up with a little bit earlier. And if you want to text in 713-572-4610, facial tattoos, the phenomenon of jersey swapping, petitions.
Yeah, the fan petitions, you know, we had a little bit of pushback from some of our listeners on fan petitions, because I'm guessing a lot of our listeners have signed a petition to fire Bill O'Brien. I think one of our listeners said, hey, listen, you got to understand, that's at least something where you feel like you're doing something, where the fan can't really do anything other than, like, all a fan can do is hit the nuclear button, which is stop going to games, like vote with his feet, which is a hard sell if you actually still love football and love the Texans. It's hard to say, okay, this is how I'm gonna vote with my feet and actually walk out. So the way fans can actually voice their disapproval, sometimes they feel like, okay, I'll sign an online petition. So I might be okay with the online petition for now.
Yeah, coping mechanism. I get that. Farewell tours. Something you brought up earlier.
Yeah, I didn't like the whole Derek Jeter and changing his number with a letter with a number. I don't like farewell tours from athletes, especially from lesser athletes. I feel like we're at the point now where lesser athletes are going to start announcing their farewell tour. Like some offensive lineman you've never heard of is going to be tweeting out, like, this is it, guys. This is the last year. People are like, all right, I guess we gotta buy you something now. It's like when you get invited to a wedding for somebody you don't like.
Like a two-time Pro Bowler. Farewell tour time.
Yeah.
Group celebration poses is absolutely at the top of my list. And I say this as somebody who was a staunch supporter of loosening up the celebration rules in the NFL. I was always somebody who was like, no, it's fun watching these guys do this and it's creative. And I think that's the thing, maybe, Seth, that bothers me the most about these group celebrations in the NFL, particularly the ones after turnovers. They're not creative at all. They all do the same thing. All 15 guys, by the way, not just 11, all 15 guys who are even rotation players who aren't on the field at the time are running down to the end zone to do the classic one guy lay across the front with his hand on his elbow. Three guys sit there and hold their arms out wide, like, what's up? The five guys behind them are standing up with their arms folded, like, don't mess with me. And then there's like three other guys doing some sort of random thing. Do something creative. Like, if you can do your group celebrations, but the whole thing where all y'all are just running down to the end zone and finding the nearest camera and just posing as 10 of you in the same exact pose that all 31 other teams are doing. Step your game up, man.
No, this is exactly where they made a mistake in not flattening the curve. They just let everything happen all at once. I'm sure somebody in the league office was like, oh, those projections are out of hand. Don't worry about it. It's no big deal. And then all of a sudden you got 40 people in a group celebration. So where the curve spiked. And now they've had to try to tamp down the curve over time, where they said, okay, well, there's going to be unsportsmanlike or delay of game penalties if you have more than just the guys on the field. And they've gotten to rein in on it. But you're right. It took something that was cool, which was loosening up the celebration rules, because now you do get actual good dances and multiplayer stuff that's actually choreographed that people like. And it ran amok. So now they had to pull it back in.
Oh, can I, along the lines of celebrating, can I give you one? I want to give you one, and it's relative to our team here in town. No more. We need to flatten the curve on in-stadium celebrations, i.e. fireworks and cannons, after any field goal of less than 45 yards. We cannot be firing, and especially of field goals that occur in the red zone. We cannot be firing off field goals when your team gets into the red zone are negatives. I get it. You're adding 3 points to the scoreboard, but they are not viewed as successful drives. If you go down and you get to the 11-yard line and you wind up with 3 points, that's not successful. So Seth, we need to get rid of firing the cannons after field goals that I'll take it down from the 45-yard thing. Field goals that where the line of scrimmage is inside the 20-yard line, no more cannons firing off. None.
I'm having post-traumatic firework disorder from the Chiefs game. I remember the Chiefs ran out of fireworks.
Oh, they because did.
They were scoring so frequently and so often and so much that they just couldn't even restock the firework. They probably had some kid running around to fireworks places. I don't know if they're legal in Missouri, so they had to run over to the Kansas side or vice versa. And that's how bad it was. We ran out of fireworks.
They texted all the cops inside the stadium and said, hey, when we get to points 45 through 51, can you guys just point your guns in the air and just shoot them? We just need loud noises, please.
Jump down and go out to the 50 and do a Yosemite Sam dance as you fire your pistol in the air.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We're going through things that we want the curve flattened on, that we need to treat the same way we're treating as a virus right now. We mentioned gender reveals, not gigantic fans of gender reveals. Seth, I want to throw one in here, not necessarily sports related. But I'm getting a lot of these days because people seem to be communicating more via text because none of us can get out of our houses for any significant period of time. Group texts that commingle groups of friends. And what I mean by that is when somebody sends out a group text, oftentimes nowadays with some sort of half-hearted joke about the pandemic or whatever the case may be, I don't need to get this text if all of the other numbers on it are show up on my phone as phone numbers and not people that are in my Rolodex on my phone. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like these texts where somebody commingles like four or five different groups of their friends, and now I'm getting reply alls from people who think they're funny and I don't know who they are. Leave me off of that stuff.
Well, you know what you need to do to try to set the right tone or set a good precedent example in that is to just identify yourself. If you see an unidentified number, just be like, this is Seth, by the way, or something. And maybe even call out the person that sent the initial group text. Be like, look, Jared's a moron. This is Seth. I obviously don't know everybody in this. Because, yeah, that's frustrating. You don't know who you're interacting with. You don't know what kind of jokes you can make when you don't know who's on the line. You know, I don't know if I can make fun of Irish people like I love to if I don't know whether a Pendergast is on the line or not.
Yeah, you know, you can do that with me right to my face and I'm not going to do anything about it. But I think it's more, Seth, I have no desire to interact with any of these people. It's the constant notifications that yeah. just, you know, your phone just sitting there every 45 seconds.
Sean, one of our listeners says one of the things that needs the curve flattened right now is dressing in a costume before games. So that's clearly a call out of the Texans linebackers group.
Oh, position group nicknames. Flatten the damn curve right now.
Rock
Do
boys.
The lunch pail does the lunch pail crew still exist now that their patron saint DJ Reader is gone?
I would imagine. I mean, that's the whole thing about being a lunch pail crew, right? You're like a no-name defense type of thing. You're not supposed to be looking for individual glory. So losing one guy doesn't change the fact that it's a lunch pail crew.
Yeah, but DJ Reader was sort of the one guy who kind of gave them like some legitimate clout. Like he actually pressured the quarterback once every couple of games. It's like Steve Carell leaving the office. Like is the lunch pail crew? Does Dunder Mifflin still exist? I don't know.
let's see. Celebrating after a play during football games, sacks, first down catches, touchdowns. Just stop already. That's from one of our listeners. Yeah. I would say maybe, don't get too curmudgeonly about this. How about, I understand not celebrating after every play. Like you make it, these guys that get up after a tackle for a 5-yard gain celebrating. I don't get it. I'm okay if it's a big play. Look, if it's a tackle, if it's a big tackle for a loss or a huge hit or something, play it up a little bit. Let me see your joy.
Does the score of the game matter?
Oh, yeah. I would say I've seen that like from four people already, is celebrating when you're down by three touchdowns in the fourth.
Yeah.
Like just give the fans some respect. Don't act like your day has been made because you made a big play at the back end of like a game in which the first three quarters you didn't stop a soul, but now you stopped somebody, so you're the big hero. No.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to say it because I like all the guys who are part of the Rock Boys, but that's a Rock Boy special right there. Like, you know, down, I remember the Denver game, they got a sack on Drew Locke, and immediately the two guys involved in the sack go down to one knee and start playing their fake guitars while they're down by 30 points or whatever it was. Like, come on, man. Just go back and line up and play your position. The score matters. The score matters. It matters to me. Yeah,
I think this is Pave Tex who says we should stop the curve of Ross Tucker. one of our guys who doesn't like Ross Tucker. I know. You know what? Just for that, we're gonna have Ross Tucker on soon. We love Ross
Hell
Tucker.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Earlier this morning at 6:03 a.m., Pavetex tweeted that I would leave my kids and my family for Ruthie from the Ozarks right now. Love me some Ozarks.
She's the best. She's awesome.
I'm only one episode into Ozark, so don't tell me anything. All I've known is it took one episode of Ozark for me to be completely stressed out and to lose sleep last night. I had nightmares about Ozark because I was so stressed out for the stupid crap that they're pulling already in episode one. I can only imagine how dumb they get by episode three or four. I'm very stressed right this moment.
You're one episode into the new season, right? You've seen seasons one and two.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm acquainted with how stressful the show is, and I'm bracing myself for more.
I binged season one and two over the last 4 days, and we're two episodes into the most recent season. I love this show. She's awesome. Ruth Langmore she's a top 20 all-time character on TV for me, with a chance to move into the top 10 this season.
Yeah.
She's
really
good.
Let's see. Flattening the curve on DBs celebrating after a dropped pass when they got beat, like they had anything to do with it. Yes, Kyle, that is exactly right. Oh, that drives you crazy. Like you'll see guys, they're beat by like 2 yards, and the receiver just drops it, and the guy starts doing the no catch signal. Like he did something. Yeah. It's amazing.
It seems like of all the things that we put out here, Seth, for flattening the curve in sports, it seems like the one that's touched the biggest nerve are the behavioral things that are part of football, right? Like celebrating and all these other things, all these on field. That's the stuff that's getting the most run on the text page right now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So Randall Cobb met with the media on Friday and was asked a question about his background growing. I think as Aaron Wilson asked the question, he had read an article about Randall Cobb talking about where he got his work ethic from, things like that. Here is what Randall Cobb, one of the newest Houston Texans, had to say.
My pops, he worked at a manufacturing company there in town, and then he would come home and do handyman work for people. You know, we'd go out and the little bit of snow that we got when we did get it, you know, we'd go out and shovel snow for other families in the neighborhood that couldn't. And you know, he's always been one that was always working, always doing something to keep busy. And, you know, I kind of picked up that trait from him. And he always taught me, you know, if I wasn't working, there's somebody out there that's working and getting better than me. So that's kind of how I've always looked at it. And, you know, it sometimes it's been my gift and my curse. You know, some of the injuries I've had come from overworking. So it's important for me to make sure that I find that balance and continue to grow as a player.
Seth, I feel like feel like that answer was enough for Bill O'Brien to sign. Forget about highlight films. Forget about injury history. He used the word work no fewer than about 8 times in a 50-second span, was talking about shoveling snow for his neighbors, how his father worked 2 jobs, blue-collar background. I feel like Bill O'Brien, that was like you had me at hello. Like you had me at snow shoveling. with O'Brien and Randall Cobb.
And did you mention your father? Is that what he said? Is he saying that his father always had him do that? Yeah. So he's because it's big with family. Bill O'Brien will always mention a guy's coming from a good family, to the point where I always kind of wonder, like, what are the guys whose families aren't mentioned think? Like, hey, what the hell, Bill? you calling my mom a whore?
Why'd you mention my family?
Everybody else's family's good enough for you, Bill, but not me. Yeah.
It's funny. Seth, I have you seen this show, Love is Blind?
I haven't. I've heard about it.
The TV show?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so the premise of the TV show is that you've got these couples, and they sit. They've never met each other before, but they just sit and get to know each other without seeing each other. They get to know each other with like a curtain in between them. And they just, you know, they talk a lot and they get to know each other. And then they have to propose or not propose without having seen them physically, without having seen what they look like. And it's amazing. And some of these, go figure, a lot of these don't work out. But the premise of the show is that they get to know the person without seeing what they look like physically. And it's based just totally on how they connect via these answers and their beliefs and everything like that. And it's very interesting to watch, except if you're a Houston Texan fan, where I feel like if you did that with Bill O'Brien and some of the draft prospects, I feel like Bill O'Brien would put like 2/3 of his big board together based on conversations he would have without even looking at them, with curtains in between them. If they got all the smart, tough, and dependable answers and everything intangibly correct, that he would take some random dude and put him as a second round pick, and people in the building would be like, so what do you exactly like about him? We watched his film. Nah, I asked this guy shoveled snow. This guy had a dad who worked 4 jobs. This guy helps old ladies across the street. I feel like I feel like Bill O'Brien respects the premise of Love is Blind. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, and but I mean, it's appealing though too. I mean, that's part of the mucky part of being an NFL coach, is trying to figure out how to get 53 or however many are going to be in the active roster now with the expanded rosters. 55 different guys of varying levels of motivation and skill and all that. Like, how do you get them together and kind of have and create a culture? It's hard to do. It's hard to do, especially when you might have to have a few guys that don't quite fit the exact mold of what you want. And that's what being a coach is, though. And that's where I sometimes get frustrated. I feel like it's my generation, Sean, that's letting mm-hmm. people down. I feel like it's this Generation X coach that doesn't like discord or disgruntlement on their football team, to where they'd rather just ship it out than learn how to deal with it. Like, I always, like, there's always disgruntlement on a football team. There just is. Deal with it. That's why you get paid $5 or $6 million a year. If you want somebody that can come in and not handle disgruntlement and do it for less than $6 million a year, I'm your guy. But I'm not the guy getting paid $6 million a year to handle this. It's got to be, that's part of your job as a coach.
That's interesting. Why do you think it's Generation X coaches? Because I'm in the same, I'm in a little more advanced part of Generation X, but I still fall into that same 1965 through early 1980s birth date window. Why do you think that is with coaches of that era?
I think, let's see. I think it's because we're cool with, or because we grew up cool with divorce. We're like, oh, okay. This is a big societal trend, and it's just the way it is. Like, I feel like, in the 1960s, if there was a divorced family on the block, it was a big deal. By the time we were growing up, it was like, okay, half your friends are divorced. Your parents are divorced. Mm-hmm. Like my parents grew up divorced. It was just kind of the way it was. So it sets a standard of like, hey, when things get tough, bail. And I'm cool with that. Yeah. So I'm going to blame my mom and dad. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to blame them for getting divorced.
There was an article on papercity.com, Paper City Mag, I forget what it is. It was a really good article talking about how, hey, boomers and millennials, just know that us Gen Xers are handling this whole pandemic and the isolation better than all y'all because of our upbringing. And it was a really funny article, Seth, because it talked about how we were forced, you know, in our era of growing up, and you and I are fairly, you know, for purposes of this argument, fairly close in age. You and I are 6-7 years apart, but grew up in the same era of having to entertain ourselves. We grew up in an era where we bought pet rocks, and it was an actual rock with a box, and we played with our pet rock. We played Pong. It was a video game that had a line that hit a dot back and forth across the screen, and we would play it for hours. We would find silly little games to play on the sidewalk. We had 3 channels back then when we were kids, and we would actually have to make sure we were in front of the TV for Bugs Bunny on Saturday. We didn't have the benefit of DVRs or watching it on our phone. So this whole isolation thing for us is actually not too bad. You know, we're equipped for this kind of thing because we essentially grew up in an entertainment environment that was far worse than this. We're cool with this.
Yeah, because you know what? And I've seen some of these articles. A lot of Gen Xers are trying to step up and act like they're not apathetic about every little thing right now. Because like even in writing that article, I feel like you're kind of defying our generation's stigma of not caring about anything. But I would say that the millennials and the Gen Zers have their share of latchkey kids too. But I don't think they understand how many more entertainment options they had than us. You know, right. Like for the most part, if you grew up in any kind of like, now if you grew up poor, it just sucks regardless of any generation. But if you grew up enough that you had like, gosh, if you had cable television for one, because I didn't even have cable television. But if you had cable television, if you had internet, if you had all these different things to occupy your time, better video games, all these kids, they don't understand what it was like before all those things. And like I grew up where there was one kid on my block that had video games until I was maybe like in eighth grade or so. And one kid, same family on our block, the Sandersons, they were awesome to have as friends. Like they had cable television, they had HBO, they had unscrambled HBO. So
yeah,
like, yeah, I do feel like the ability to entertain yourself without electronics is something that's a lost art.
Yeah. I say all this to say that I don't want to downplay Randall Cobb's blue collar background. I like that he has it. I just feel like that answer might've been enough to get him 3 years, $27 million. I feel like, Sean, if Bill O'Brien had known those bullet pointed facts, he might have, Randall Cobb, it wouldn't have mattered what he did in Dallas last year.
A disturbing text here from a listener, Sean. With all the sickness, depression, death, and bad news, I get so tired of hearing you guys because all you are haters. You're negative. There's no future for the Texans. Everything is bad. You guys suck. Which, irony of all ironies. I know who this is, by the way. This is definitely Texans Jay because there's no punctuation. So this is on the text line, but we have one guy. There's a guy on Twitter, Texans Jay, who's upset that we're negative all the time, but he refuses to use punctuation, and he's refused to use punctuation. I'm going to read this exactly as it's punctuated. With all of the sickness, depression, death, bad news, I get so tired of hearing you guys because all you are haters. You're negative. There's no future for the Texans. Everything is bad. You guys suck. Boom. Texans Jay. That's got to be Texans Jay. Listen, Texans Jay, you know what I get tired of? I get tired of you blaming me for Bill O'Brien's issues. Like, don't be mad at me that Bill O'Brien traded away one of the best players the Texans have ever had for an aging running back who hasn't been good since 2016. What are you, a schmuck? What are you, a moron? What are you, somebody that just doesn't even understand when somebody's spitting in your face? You strike me as the kind of guy where somebody would walk up onto the street, spit in your face, and you're going to blame his wife for it. I'm just the innocent bystander here. Texans Jay, sick of this guy.
Did you tell him? First of all, I love your punctuation forensics. Are outstanding. This is the modern day equivalent of doing handwriting comparisons, that you are able to look at how somebody punctuates a text and you're able to map it to their Twitter account, because I completely agree with you.
Well, no, that's the thing. Texans Jay doesn't understand. And I told him, like, yeah, we are being negative lately. I will say that if anything, I'm probably one of the more, I've actually, since my initial 48-hour shock where I completely just wanted to burn down the earth because I was so upset about the DeAndre Hopkins trade, I'm at least sitting here trying to create hypotheticals for Bill O'Brien. Like, don't act. There's like a sliver of Texans fans who act like all Texans fans aren't, like all Texans fans are in the same boat where they're like, no, we need to be more positive. You are in the extreme minority right now. Most of your brethren, most of your Texans fans are extremely upset about certain things with the Texans right now. Don't act like the media. Look, in a lot of areas of life, the media is the problem. This is not one of them. This is the actual people rising up in defiance and upset and angry about something. And we are the reflection of that, not the actual progenitors of it.
To progenitors, great word. To that end, Jack Easterby on Twitter yesterday morning tweets at 9:39 a.m. Every day is a gift. That's all he tweeted. Every day is a gift. Now, I was a little put out that he didn't quote Tony Soprano with that, because that's a Tony Soprano quote. But Jack Easterby, Texans executive vice president of football operations, tweets, every day is a gift. Here are the replies, Texans Jay. K. Scott, the only gift we need is you and Bill O'Brien resigning or being fired. Next reply, Mike, every day and Texans Pro Bowler is a gift for most of the NFL. Next tweet reply to Jack Easterby saying every day is a gift. UK Texan, so was the DeAndre Hopkins trade. Next one, at Texas Grooves, if this is the real Jack Easterby, you and O'Brien need to catch the first ride out of Houston. You're ruining my favorite team. The next one, delete your account and resign from your job. No one wants you here anymore. You aren't welcome. The next one in reply to every day is a gift. ... says the Arizona Cardinals. the next one, every day truly is a gift for being yourself, completely inept. The next reply, by the way, Seth, I'm not cherry picking the negative replies and skipping over positive ones. These are consecutive. The Patriots will certainly agree when you succeed with your plan to give them Deshaun Watson. not the day you guys, this is again, response to every day is a gift. Not the day you guys gave away DeAndre Hopkins. That day wasn't a gift. your trades are gifts. Leave my city. Now, finally, there is one person replying with a Bible verse. So there you go. And then there's a slew of other negative ones here. So
one of the other guys, the 9305 guy on the text line that always worries that we're being too negative, says that we're helping to promote, to provoke the negativity. Don't act so innocent. I think if anything, and that's what's so weird about it, is like we generally get criticized for being too nice to the Texans or being homers or what have you. Mm-hmm. I've never once gone out with any kind of an agenda for provoking negativity for the sake of ratings or clicks or anything like that. I pretty much call things like I see them. And at times I'm excited and happy about it. Every single time the Texans play the Patriots, I talk myself into the Texans beating the Patriots. Like, I generally do that. So like, if you think that my angst right now over Bill O'Brien, the general manager, has anything to do with any kind of contrived ploy or wanting to instigate people, you honestly are. You're letting people pull the wool over your eyes. You're letting Bill O'Brien basically just walk into your village and set fire to all the thatch roofs, and you're letting it happen. You, my friend, are no better than a turncoat in a time of war. You, my friend, are somebody that cannot be trusted, and frankly, I'd like to see your papers.
Set fire to all their what? Thatch roofs?
Thatch roofs. The roofs.
Oh, thatch roofs. Okay.
Yeah.
They said thatch roofs. I'm like, oh, okay. Dumb people made out of thatch. I thought you rube with a B, but you thatch roofs. Okay. So he's burning down the whole village is what you're saying.
Yeah. I'm cool with thatch roofs. Yeah. If you're dressed in thatch, I'm going to leave you alone.
Dullards dressed in thatch. That's what we've got. So Jack Easter. I wonder, do you think Easterby reads the replies?
I don't know. I wonder about that. I would imagine he does, right? He wants to see that. I would imagine he seems like this is a guy that's probably pretty well-centered, right? He probably looks at it and thinks, okay, well, these are people that are disgruntled or maybe they're jealous. That's one thing I've never understood are people that like are able to dismiss anything, like any kind of insult or anything, is saying like, well, that person's just jealous. I've never understood that.
Yeah. I can't. I've gotten better at compartmentalizing stuff like that. I've gotten better at ignoring it. One of the things I do on Twitter, and this is not to say that you should equate your worth to your followership. You know what I mean? But one of the things I do when someone says something that's clearly just designed to get a reaction is I look at their Twitter bio. And if it's somebody with like 13 followers or something, then I go, what am I doing here? You know what I mean? Like, what? Okay. What am I doing? Like, it's one thing if you get into a debate with somebody else who's in this business, because I do think that is part of social media for an audience, is they like to watch. As long as it's a productive argument and it's not just two people insulting each other for the sake of insulting each other. But if it's somebody just looking to get a reaction, I always look at their bio. And if their bio, if they got 18 followers or something like that, that's where you step back and go, okay, remind yourself, what are you doing here? Is this a good use of your time? And I've gotten pretty good at that over the last year. I have to say, I have occasional relapses like any conflict addict would have. But I'm getting better. I'm flattening the curve on it, Seth, is what I'm doing. I'm flattening the curve.
I think for the most part, like I've tried to get good at like, okay, am I angry at this person because I'm disagreeing with them, or I'm angry with them because they're actually insulting me? Because if I'm angry at them because I'm disagreeing with them, then that's a me problem. If I'm angry at them because they're actually insulting me, well, like, okay, I don't need to actually be listening to, like, I don't need to be on this app to be insulted. So, like, I'm done with this person. But there are times where you realize, like, oh, I'm getting mad online, and it's just because I disagree with this guy, so I should probably back off a little bit and examine myself.
Yeah, no, the thing that usually gets me is when they go, no, what you think is blah, blah, blah. Like, when they climb inside your head and tell you what you're thinking, that's still something, that's still a blind spot for me when it comes to not getting into conflict. I'm probably telling people exactly how to get at me if they want to. And, yeah. But that's usually what gets me, like, no, what you think is this. I'm like, no, I know what I think. It's my brain, bastard. All right. Seth, we're about out of time. In the Loop is up next. Landry Locker and John Lopez. I will see you right back here virtually tomorrow at 6 a.m.
All right, buddy. Let's do it.
Let's do it. We'll do it at 6 a.m. tomorrow. We appreciate all of you tuning in. Appreciate all of you tuning in throughout the day as well, whether on radio.com or rewinding on the app, listening to the whole show on your smart speakers, or streaming live on the website, sportsradio610.com. We appreciate all of you, and we are here for you. Guess who's here for you now? In the Loop, Landry Locker and John Lopez are next. We'll see you tomorrow morning, everybody.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.